So it's our tradition here on Ango, which is an intensive retreat, and some of us have now been sitting for 2 weeks, day after day, sitting and walking. And each evening, one of us draws the short lot and has to say something. Tonight it's me. And we've been looking at this text, The Four Methods of Bodhisattva Guidance, a text written in the 13th century by a great Japanese Zen teacher named Dogen, who took great delight in language and took great delight in using language to go beyond language. This was written for practitioners of Buddhism like us, written for lay practitioners. And it is a text about guidelines for how we might live our life, which of course is quite a difficult thing to do as a human being. All of us born into this world and have to try somehow to make sense of it. Perhaps when we're younger, we just do what we're told. Or maybe when we're younger, we do exactly the opposite of what we're told. But as we grow older, somehow we have to make our own way and have to figure out who we are, and have to make very important decisions about how to spend our life. Of course, many practical decisions, how to earn enough money for food, clothing, and shelter. But also very important decisions of what we give our time to, who we spend our time with, where we head. And the fundamental teaching of Buddhism is that we are living in the midst of a vast and wondrous mystery. And that all of our thinking is only one small part of this mystery of being human. Usually, we believe our thoughts. So thoughts arise in the mind, and we say we identify with our thoughts. So we look out and see the world, and we see we like some things and we don't like others. We spend time trying to get others to do what we want them to do. And actually spend time trying to get ourselves to do what we want ourselves to do. Most of us have some kind of clear plan of who we should be or how we should behave. And I think if we're honest, many of us don't do so well at this great plan. So we come to Zen to study this matter of being human. And all of the teaching of Zen is teaching that points us to ourself. There are hundreds and thousands of books written on Zen and talks given and instructions. But the essential point is to turn to examine our own experience. And so here Dogen is talking about this fourth method of bodhisattva guidance, or this fourth direction, we might say. The first direction was giving. And The second was kind speech. The third was beneficial action. They were so vivid when we were talking about them that we circle round and round here. But this fourth one is identity action. He says identity action means non-difference. And I think he's pointing us toward a kind of a wholehearted participation in our lives. Again, from the thinking mind, the mind that's trying to make sense of things, we're always at some distance from ourselves. We're always and endlessly concerned about how was I? How am I? How will I be? There's this constant reference to me, worried about how other people see me or what other people say, worried about how I see myself and what I say. And we sometimes talk about this practice of Zen as cutting the gap between ourself and ourself. And we might say cutting the gap between ourself and the immediacy of the moment. As human beings, we create a story of ourself. If I asked any of us, who are you? You could tell me, born in such and such a year, lived here, I do this, I don't do that. We all have this idea. But when we look into our experience, we can perhaps find something more than our idea. That there is an immediacy to our life that is always present. When you eat a delicious dinner, maybe we can say that was delicious, thank you so much, but in some way, no way really to describe. How do you describe what it's like to walk through a beautiful garden on a spring day? How do you describe how the cool breeze feels on your cheek? How do you really describe what is in your heart? In your deep heart and your deep longing? Our experience of human beings is on this level totally unexpressible. Poets for thousands of years and writers of songs and painters of paintings all are trying to capture this, and sometimes we get it. We hear a song on the radio, or we hear a song that we've heard for many years, and it touches us. Or we're speaking with a friend, and we get something. These moments of connection, these moments of intimacy, are such precious treasures. They are the aliveness of our life. And the teaching of Zen is that this precious treasure of intimacy is possible in every moment and every circumstance. And we can participate in this intimacy only by giving up our stance of separateness. This is practicing non-difference, this identity action. Whether there is another human being around or not makes no difference. we can fully participate in our life walking alone down the street. But this is, as we say, quite difficult to do. So, and we see this very immediately as we practice our zazen. Zazen being simply seated meditation. So we sit. All of us come in here this evening, and we sit. And as we become still, of course, we notice that the mind may not be so still. And we can also notice what is in our hearts. Maybe some of us this evening are broken-hearted and lost. Others full of a kind of warmth and love or compassion. And we are encouraged to pay attention to what is actually here. That no matter how much we would like to be somewhere else or like to be someone else, actually all we have is this moment. And it does not appear that we get to choose the content of the moment or the content of our mind. So the thoughts that are in your mind and perhaps the troubles you are carrying or the worries or the joys, the exaltations you carry are just what are here now. And our work in Zen is to allow things to be as they are. Melissa was telling us this morning that the two other translations of this, the last part of the first paragraph talking about identity, others and self are one, lute, song, and wine are one with human being. The other translators talk about cultivating a friendliness. So others and self cultivate a friendliness toward each other. And I think this is a much easier way in, and perhaps our deepest instruction in our zazen is to cultivate this basic friendliness towards ourselves, towards others, towards what arises in the moment. This is very difficult practice. Very difficult because our opinion, the grip of our opinion is so strong, this ancient certainty of separateness, this ancient certainty that I am right and you are wrong. We human beings kill each other over our opinion. But our vow here as bodhisattvas, bodhisattva means wisdom being. The bodhisattva way is to give our life in service of this burning world. And we give our life in service, first of all, by allowing our heart to be touched by this moment. By allowing ourselves to sit when we sit and walk when we walk. By allowing what is here to be here. We find our way to participate wholeheartedly in our life. And the teaching is that when we participate wholeheartedly, whatever the content, that in this wholehearted participation, in this intimacy, we find a freedom and a world of release. we find our true self, not a little self fighting for this and that, but the self that is this whole world, this shimmering aliveness here in this moment. So, thank you.
So please make yourselves comfortable. This is a time for our Dharma dialogue. We're going to have a discussion about anything that's come up for you around the talk or meditation practice, the text by Dogen, or anything. So first we'll go around and say our names, and let's honor each other by saying our name completely and not rushing through this. So I'm Melissa.
Todd. Steve.
Joe.
James.
Christine. Elaine.
Nathan.
Jeannie. Diane.
Greg.
Steve.
Aaron.
Harold.
Deb.
Brian.
Jesse.
Megan.
Andrea.
Christine.
David. I can never remember whether I start or not. So. So, questions, observations? Yeah, there.
I'm sorry, but I still don't understand identity action.
Is there anyone else who has? So, one of the important things as we read Dogen and as you listen to a talk, I'd encourage you to listen for what you do understand. Because so we will spend the next 4 days talking about identity action, and at the end we will still hopefully not understand it. But there is something about being fully present in what we're doing, about not standing outside of it. So when you walk, walk, and when you eat your dinner, eat your dinner.
There's another translation, you know, there's many translations, because when Dogen wrote, he was writing in this 13th century Japanese. It's very hard to understand, even for modern Japanese people, what he was saying. And one of the translations of identity action that I prefer, I think, is cooperation, which means you're cooperating with the universe. Like everything that happens, you're not separating yourself from it. So right now I'm talking, and there's a way I could be talking where I'm kind of sitting outside myself slightly, thinking, is she making any sense? I don't know. This is kind of interesting. No, she's really smart. No, she's really stupid. You know, that kind of thing. There's often a separation. And the same thing, you know, reaching out for to ring a bell, you could say, now I'm going to ring the bell. Oh, I really hope that I do a good job. And you know, it sort of gets in the way. So it's action and complete identity with. Yeah. So, you know, and I really totally agree with David that the way to best understand Dogen is to head towards what you understand, and the rest of the stuff will fall into place, because it is identity action itself. So thank you for your question.
Yeah.
So I guess what I understand is just what happens every moment. But you know, we're supposed to be just into the moment and not really into what's supposed to happen because we're sitting. But if nothing ever happened, we wouldn't sit. So I guess I'm. On the one hand, saying, okay, we're just going to be in the moment. On the other hand, we hope that we would not suffer as much and therefore help other people not suffer as much. So there's this outcome, which we're not supposed to think about, but it is there for Four Noble Truths. Mm-hmm. But then again, there are times, a lot of the time in my daily life, I try to be present, and it's like, nothing's happening here. I just feel bad.
And so feeling bad is nothing happening?
Well, you know, there is a release in this practice. We know that, mm-hmm. Right? You Suffering is
sometimes,
release.
Sometimes, yeah.
For a little while.
Sometimes, yeah.
For a little while.
Yeah.
Those are the enlightened moments. So, what do you do with that when you're just sitting there on a plane somewhere and you think, well, God, this could be great meditation. But no.
I find that sitting right here on this cushion. I mean, seriously, that sometimes there, as we sit, we can really be present, as you say, and there's some spaciousness. And then other times we sit and we're just sitting in the middle of being caught, and we don't like it. I don't like it one bit. And I tell the same story you do. I say, well, nothing's happening. 30 years, nothing's happening. And it's quite vivid and appears to be a mistake. Right? I want the other meditation. But part of what we're doing as we sit is cultivating the broadest friendliness we can. So friendliness even with the unfriendliness that comes up, I don't like this state. Right? There is, that does arise. So there isn't, I don't think there's any way to escape what you're saying, but just to turn it, and especially those moments on the plane, nothing going on the cushion, nothing going on, that's where we really have to turn toward the moment, and it's very hard.
And I also think, Joe, what you just described, it's not just David who has a mind like yours, you know. I think doesn't everybody in here want something to be different than the way it is? You know, really, hands? I mean, come on, at least one thing? Right.
Yeah.
I thought it would be unanimous. I had a feeling. Because this is that we look at life and we're perpetually dissatisfied with it. That's just normal. And then we hear about Buddhism. Now, some of you are here for the first time, and some of you are here for the 40 millionth time, or at least it feels that way. And it doesn't really matter. We've been talking about this for the past couple of weeks quite a bit in relationship to this text. We all have this idea of some other way that we could be living that's better than this. And we get addicted to that idea. And even though we all agreed that we want something different, we could all raise our hands for that, I bet if we went around and shared the fantasy of what it could be like, it would all be different. But it has some similar components. Some people say, I want to be more peaceful, I don't want to get so upset, I want to be healthier, happier, you know, that stuff. And then, you know, we read about enlightenment, and we think, oh, that's what I want. And then we say enlightenment equals, I want to be happier, I want to be more peaceful, blah, 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 blah. But in this teaching, the coolest thing about it is, and Dogen keeps pointing to it over and over and over again, is that what we're longing for is already here. Already here, and we're missing it because we're stuck in our heads thinking about what it's supposed to be like. That's an amazing teaching, and you know, but what's here? This body, and we're sitting in this room on uncomfortable chairs or cushions or whatever. This couldn't be it. It's got to be better than this. And so at a certain point, we begin to recognize that longing takes the same thought form over and over and over again. And at a certain point, you can't make this happen. At a certain point, we get really sick of it. Yuck. I don't want to do this anymore to myself. And then at that point, we look around and we go, oh, could this be it? Now, don't believe this, because that would be buying into the way I'm talking about it. This is a unique discovery for every person. It's always different. So I'm really grateful that you brought this very, very normal yearning into the room. Thanks.
Jeannie.
Jeannie has come from Florida.
Hey.
Yay!
to the cold north.
It's better there.
Better in Florida. That's where I want to be.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing. It's not just future thinking. It's like, it was better there when I was...
So that this particular part, this fourth part, is particularly fascinating to me because I've always had this problem with self and other.
Right? The small
pinch. You know, my particular problem with it is that I very easily do what I think identity action is. I just totally merge and I forget who I am.
Right.
Which is not always so skillful or helpful or appropriate. And I've always gotten confused with spiritual teachings that talk about this oneness, because that's a piece of cake for me.
Yeah.
Neurotically, inappropriately, it's always a piece of cake. But I get, I get it around two or three times, looking for, is he saying something else? Because that's what I always read into it,
right.
This invitation to be one. And I did, I remember, I haven't read it recently, but, this thing about rewards and punishment, some way in which we are instructed, yes, and we discriminate.
Right.
Yes, right. Yes.
Appropriately also. Yeah. That's what I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
That's it.
Wow.
That's my confusion.
Beautifully said. And it is better in Florida.
No.
We should all go to Florida. It's true, and this is one of the great things one of the things I love about Dogen is that he gets this problem too. He gets the other side of the problem. That because sometimes when we've been meditating for a while, even without a natural affinity like yours, we get lost in oneness. And that's not the whole thing, to just realize that everything is it and I'm it. That's another... trap that this must be enlightenment, yay, and then fades away. So he points over and over again, like you say, towards the end of the text to punishment and reward. He makes differentiations, and even in this section that we read tonight about the lute and the
song and wine,
the song and the wine and the lute. You probably read this and go, what? Mm-hmm. But he's quoting a poem from a Chinese poet that talks about those are the three beautiful things that you should be one with. But then he goes on and, so there's the lute and the lute. There's the lute and the song. There's the lute and the poem. So he starts making, there's oneness, but there's also differentiation. And so, and every one of us has to orient away from what's natural to what is a little more difficult to observe. So, for you might turn your attention to the things of the world and how separate and unique and perfect they are, just as an exercise. But ultimately, it's both. There's form and there's emptiness. And there's just different ways of talking about the same thing. Somebody said that. Was it you?
No. Might have been.
But somebody said it just like in the past day or two, that form and empty. Oh, it was me. Some really amazing person. Because somebody was saying, I don't want form and emptiness to come together. Wasn't that a great thing to say? We're chanting the Heart Sutra. I like form and emptiness to stay separate. And the thing is that there are all ways of pointing at the same thing, which is ways of pointing. And Jeannie's going to give a talk maybe sometime during the next 4 days about identity action, so that'll be very interesting. Stay tuned.
Expose my
news. Yeah. Diane. Yeah.
Aaron.
What about anger? Irritability?
Yeah.
But what
same about
kind of not wanting to harm?
Yeah.
And how do you be in the moment with that? And not...
But a wonderful question, and I think it's so important to make this real for ourselves in whatever way, so nice theory, and I can sort of see you thinking about your life as we do, well, what about when this comes up? And And there's a precept, and it's called not indulging in anger. There is no such precept as not feeling angry, and no such possibility as not being angry.
Mm-hmm.
Again, from this human realm. So then the question is, how do we meet our anger? Many of us get angry at our anger, want to go away from it, or deny it, or try to pretend it's somebody else's problem. And so I think there's something in this, an encouragement to meet it and to be fully angry. And we can be fully angry, flame coming out of our ears, vibrating, without doing anything. That oftentimes we act out from it almost as a way of not feeling it, because it can be so hot and painful. And I'll just do something because I can't bear it. I can't bear myself. So I think in our sitting, in some way, we're increasing our capacity to bear the intensity of our life that rises like a flame. And whether it's anger or sadness or, you name it, it rises unbidden. And no matter what we think of ourselves, it comes up. And it comes up, and then we think something else about ourselves. Oh, I'm a bad person because I'm angry. Or, they really deserve it, whatever. But the possibility... yeah, I like that one too. I can't believe you made me angry. It's clear. And it just appears that way. But one of the things that happens over... Actually, any extended period of sitting, and I call 10 minutes an extended period of sitting, is that we can begin to see that arising and notice that in our lives that sometimes we're angry and then actually sometimes we're not. And actually, where it comes from and where it goes to is a real mystery. Because the same children that can be so lovable and sweet one moment... The next moment, you just want to knock their heads together, right? The same kids, but it comes and goes. At least that's how it was for me. Maybe some
that's
other
a good
yeah. yeah. Other parents in the room.
Other parents in the room. Yeah. Yeah. We had a sweet talk last night from one of our senior Dharma teachers, Bob Waldinger. I don't know how many of you were here for that, but he spoke about the gift of anger as well, that, so much has been going on this week. All of these talks, by the way, are available online, and you can listen to them if you want to catch up. But there have been a lot of talks centering around the bombings in Boston, and our own anger about them, our grief, our sorrow, but also... Bob talked about how he's a very nice person, like very mild-mannered. You never think he would ever get angry. And he talked about an experience he had where he got really, really angry. And really, it was a work thing, and he wanted to really take out, all his rage on people. And then the bombing happened, and because he had actually practiced this, he turned with friendliness towards his anger. He could kind of get... what might lead somebody to do something like that out of anger. So there wasn't so much separation as there would normally be, like, oh, anger, I would never do that. I would never, but of course we, knocking children's heads together. David has never done that. Right?
Thank you for standing up.
But the urge to hurt, to strike out is so human. And so Dogen and all Zen teachers really are pointing us to this basic friendliness, to be friendly towards our own rising of the thing we hate the most about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's not anger. I have a long list of self-hatred things. Anger is one of them, but it's not like the top hit list. But it doesn't make any difference. It's just this long list of things I will turn away from, and other And the teaching of Zen is that everything that arises is it. That means if we're angry, that's it too. And so that's partly what he's talking about. Not in this translation about befriending, but
befriending.
Oh, but what does it say?
Be one with.
Oh, being one with. Being one with your anger doesn't mean, as David was saying, striking out against people, but it means, whoa, anger is fully present now. And I'm, in my own experience, when that happens, when I do this identity action with anger, I tend to be less acting out. Because, you know what I mean? And this thing about, the acting out is almost a product of trying not to be angry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Self-righteous instead. So, and these are the same topics. We actually are touching into this over and over again. That's great to bring up.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Steve.
So, this exact thing is one of the big problems with meditation for me, because I have this idea that I should become more calm and that for me it's a milder form of anger that I think of as being irritation, that I'm irritable a lot of the time, and I just it's alive with me, and the pretty much the least thing in the world that I want to do is sit with myself when I am in that condition, and I come here to the Zendo and I find myself doing exactly that. And I think, well, what is the point of this? I've been sitting here for years now, and I still get irritated, and I still come to the Zendo and see myself doing this, and it just makes me feel worse that I'm sitting here doing this to myself, and I wonder, why is this? And I think, what's really helping me with this is that I feel like I've gotten a little bit of a shift in what my goal is, and that I'm seeing that perhaps, one of the most beneficial actions that I can take for the world is to learn how to sit with myself in the presence of that irritation and not have to do something disruptive to myself or to others in the face of that emotion appearing. And here I am learning how to face that. And boy, if you can make that shift from, I'm supposed to feel good and I'm supposed to get enlightened and I'm supposed to be calm and peaceful, and if you can drop that story and say, well, the thing I'm doing here is learning how to sit with myself the way I am, that makes a big difference for me.
Yeah. So beautifully said, Steve. And I think, you can't just drop that story. That's the other side of it. You know that as well.
Yes.
Having clung to it for many, many years, I just know that about you and me. You have to also realize that the story of wanting to be peaceful, calm, some version of awakened or enlightened, you have to embrace that too. That story is also it. If you're plagued by that story, then to turn away from that would be to cut off some really important part of the self. So somebody asked me recently, I feel cut off from the world and I feel walls coming up. How do I get the walls to go down? And what I said was, you feel those walls. You get to know those walls. That's the instruction. It's counterintuitive. But you just spoke the truth of it.
And the teaching is that in this self-meeting self, that as we can bear ourself and our anger and what is most wrong with us, that there is a transformation that happens. It's not a permanent, and it's not like any image you have of it, but there is some possibility of self-meeting self. We are... in the Master's Forge, and we are melted down, and version 2.0 you know, three comes through, which works pretty well for a little while. Then the bugs start showing up, and the two, and so you got to take that one to the cushion, you know, and melt that one down, and then the, and that this isn't the joy of our life. Huh?
And what is fascinating to me is and that's because we talk in stories about everything, and so. We'll switch one, like this for mice, we'll switch one story for another. You know, I'm doing this now, and this is, you know, it's going to be helpful. I'm sitting with this, and sort of like commenting on my internal experience.
Yeah, yeah, like sportscaster.
Yep, he's sitting with his his anger now, doing a pretty good job now.
And so the compassion is not only for the sensations that I'm experiencing, but also for the commentary.
Yes.
The awareness
yes.
of the commentary.
Exactly.
Accompanies
yeah.
For everything.
Also.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, a friendliness with everything.
Yeah.
And it's and you could it could just slightly go over into blah, I want it makes me throw up, but you know
just before. Just this
just
edge.
Just before that edge. I don't mean what you said. I mean, you know, oh, just be friendly with everything that arises, and then everything will be good. No, I'm not talking about that.
Because it's fierce.
Because it's fierce, right. It's, we're talking about fire today, burning.
Yeah.
You know, this is about burning up all the stuff, all the ideas, all the thoughts. It's fierce, fierce, fierce.
And I love what you said, right? Because the whole, I mean, it just put to words what I was sitting here feeling of that they're all just stories. I mean, in some Zen is so disappointing.
No, well, we have new people here. Don't say that.
If I think about, like, I'm angrier than I ever was, and when I'm sad, I'm sadder than I ever was.
Yeah.
Now, you know, when I'm, you know, feeling joyful, I'm more joyful than I. But you know, it's not what I was. Like you said, it's not what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But then, so it's almost like a friendliness to the stories that mm-hmm. you know they're not right or wrong or what you know.
Right.
What it's not this or that. It's just oh yeah that's all true and,
yeah.
and one being true doesn't mean the other isn't and
right.
So the, almost a friendliness to as you were saying right to the commentary. You know,
yes.
It's a part of
yes.
It too.
Totally.
Yeah. And it's not about coming up with the right story
right.
either. It's really seeing story after story, and the preciousness of that.
Yeah. Oh, I meant to say it's so disappointing, and it's a beautiful practice. Like the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's what was in my head. Sure. That's one of those ones that is like.
Yeah. Okay, you can stay.
No. Yeah. If I don't ring the bell, nobody's leaving.
Did you have something else?
Well, it was another one of those like it's you know they're just two different stories. But they're not.
Right.
One doesn't, you know, disappointing doesn't mean it's not beautiful, and
right.
and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, Florida, Massachusetts, Jeannie, Melissa, Todd, Joe. I mean, we can make endless better worse things,
yeah.
but no, and so the stories
right.
are the same.
Right.
James, last word from James.
Oh.
Or question.
Well, I keep coming back to this quote that David, you gave 3 or 4 lifetimes ago, earlier in the Ango about, you know, it was something like, greed, not such a bad thing. Like, greed is fine, right?
Right.
Lots of good work mm-hmm. can be done with that energy. And having to see all the way through it, right? And so dissatisfaction, anger, these many, sometimes very painful experiences. I hate this, right? Not so bad. That's energy. Lots of good work has been done with that energy. And you have to see all the way through it.
Yeah. If we weren't disturbed, we wouldn't be here. You know, if there weren't something in our heart, in our breast, that is, stirring. Yeah. Or making our life uncomfortable, we wouldn't have energy. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
You don't mean disturbed clinically.
That too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Well,